Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Hey everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman, and that was Dara Williams, not me, singing the Solartopia song, along with our wonderful buddy Pete Seeger, who's looking down in shock at what's going on in our country, and the great David Burns, who wrote the words to that song, except for the one Solartopia. I wrote that one. And we are back for a full hour here with a great cast of fabulous characters from the anti-nuclear world. We're going to celebrate the shutdown of the Indian Point nuclear plant, and we're going to talk about the horrific bill that has just passed the Ohio legislature. What else is new? And go into the detail of the nightmare we're facing. We got Paul Gunter here speaking from the control room of Fermi Unit 2. And Tim Jensen, not all of you can see this. We've switched over to Zoom, and which is wonderful. I love it. And I can see my guests. And Tim Jensen has the world behind him here. He looks like, I don't know, Tim, what's your outer space mode here? I mean, it's fabulous what you got going there, that world behind you.
It's the best option I had. There's nothing special about it.
Yeah, well, you in my situation, you look at my kitchen, but what can I tell you? Cindy Folkers from Beyond Nukes, and we got Mike, Joe DeMars in Ohio to talk about the latest travesty there. So I hope we're joined. We're supposed to be joined by Susan Shapiro and Kevin Camps, but I want to start with the Georgia primary. This is exactly what with the chaos in Georgia. This is number three now. We've had Wisconsin, we've had Ohio, which people aren't talking about, but which is an utter catastrophe in terms of the primary. And now we got Georgia. This is the Trump plan for the November election. In Georgia, they bought over the objections of everybody who knows anything about voter technology, voting machine technology. They spent $100 million. This catastrophe in Georgia is the product of $100 million purchase of voting machines that we know do not work and will not work and would not work and are designed to fail. I mean, this is exactly the reality of the technologies that we've been plagued with since 2000 and the 2002 Help America Vote Act. So we have had many, many shows about this. We'll have many more. But the reality is we have less than 5 months until the election. And this is what we're looking at. This, imagine that yesterday in Georgia, Tuesday in Georgia, was the entire United States on November 3rd, where 130 million people show up to vote. Now, it used to be at 116,990 voting stations or precincts. But because of COVID, the voting centers have been vastly shrunk in number. That's fine. But what you need to do in the situation, we have all the elements. We have basically, and I'm going to go on this for a little bit, but we will get to nuclear. I won't make it more than 15 minutes. But the reality is, because of the new situation, with between COVID and the failure, the 20-year failure, really, of the voting machines that were put in with Hava. After the 2000 election fiasco, where George W. Bush lost the election and won the Electoral College, but he didn't really, and then Al Gore didn't stand up. And because of the fiasco in South Florida with the butterfly ballots and all the other stuff, the corporations jumped in, and in 2002 passed the Hava Act, which Help America Vote Act, which switched to voting machines. And the voting machines are perfectly designed to steal elections. That's the purpose of voting machines, is to steal elections. They spread them all over the country. And so 117,000 or thereabout precincts have voting machines. People go in, use touch screens. They're hackable. And they have been flipped and flipped and flipped wherever we go. And so we wind up with Bush. We wind up, and then in 2010, and this is critical, and people don't talk about this, and Obama let it go by without a single word. In 2010, you may remember, he got up and the Republicans took over the House and the Senate and basically said, we got a shellacking. It was more than a shellacking. What happened was the Republican Party, with the Koch brothers' money and their ALEC organization, went in, figured out they could, which key legislative races they could win to take over the gerrymandering in 2010. And they gerrymandered the key swing states. And this is what we're facing now. They went in and they gerrymandered the districting, especially in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, North Carolina, Arizona, Florida, all the key swing states, Texas, which are given anyway. We wound up with extreme right-wing legislatures in states that were evenly divided. In Ohio, there's a slight majority of Democrats. And in 2010, they took a slight majority of Democrats and turned it into supermajorities in both houses of the Ohio legislature. And this was done all over the country. And so what we're now facing in 2020 is a series of extreme right-wing legislatures that are bound and determined to not allow people of color to vote. That's the bottom line here. And so for the last 10 years, we have faced these insane legislatures, especially in places like Ohio, which are willing to do anything and will have absolutely no concern for the public will. In Ohio, which is, 50-50, you've got 2/3 and 3/4 majorities of Republicans in the House and Senate, the legislative House and Senate. So what they're doing now in 2020 is they're making it impossible to have a fair election. The legislature in Georgia has approved this Ku Klux Klan governor and secretary of state to buy $100 million worth of voting machines, guaranteed to fail. And that's exactly what we've seen this Tuesday this week in Georgia. Insane. When you see a long line at a voting place, you know that they have a rigged setup to prevent people from voting. That's what it's all about. And we saw it in Wisconsin, where the governor, because of COVID, pushed the vote into June. And there, the legislature, which in an evenly divided state is a supermajority of Republicans, pushed it back into April and then made sure that there was an utter catastrophe. So this is what we're looking at in November. And if this happens in November, we will have a dictator in the White House for the rest of his life. That's what we're looking at. So I am running every Monday. We have an emergency election protection meeting on Zoom. You can email me, folks, to get on it. I'm at solartopia@gmail.com. If you want to join us in this election protection meeting, and then next Wednesday, June 15th, no, I keep getting the date wrong. It's June 17th at 3 p.m. We will have a national a COVID emergency election protection webinar. And I'll lay out the three basic pieces of the coming election are the voter registration rolls, which 16 million people have been stripped from the voter registration rolls. And we can guess their basic ethnic and racial background, most of them. 16 million people have been stripped from the voter rolls. Now, the good news is in some places, I think in Wisconsin, half the people who were stripped have been added back in. If you're stripped from the voter roll, you can get back on. And you can re-register online, you can call in, whatever you got to do. Then vote by mail. Vote by mail should be a great way to do it. Should be a great way to conduct elections, primarily because you get a paper ballot. And then if you get the paper ballot, you can fill it out. You can either mail it back in or do what I did here in California. I went to the local school on Sunday before the Tuesday election, and I walked in my ballot. I showed it to them. They showed me what to sign. I licked it, dropped it off, took 10 minutes. It was perfect. And then the final piece of it is the vote count. We do have a machine. It is a workable, hard-to-hack machine that gives digital images. You take the paper ballot, which comes in by mail. You run it through the machine. It creates a ballot image, a digital image, and then you count the images. And if there's a contest or a recount, you still have the paper ballots. But I'm telling you, folks, right now, this please join our call. Email me about it, Solartopia Gmail. PRN is running it, which is a great thing. Thank you so much. At the station, they'll put it out on the podcast because it is a Zoom on the podcast agenda. And then, so email me at solartopia@gmail.com. Join us on Mondays at 5 p.m. Eastern time. And then on Wednesday, next Wednesday, the 15th, or rather the 17th, we will have a national emergency election protection webinar at 3 p.m. Eastern time. And if you want to sign up for that, email me, but it'll be on Facebook so that it'll be available to everybody. But just to sign off on this, you know, what we saw in Georgia, if that happens on November 3rd, which is, that's the plan. That is the Republican plan, the Trump plan for the fall election, is to have the voting places in total chaos and 8-10 hour lines. In Ohio in 2004, we had lines at in Granville at Kenyon College that were 12 hours long. Now, these were kids, and they had a good time, and they got pizza and all that other stuff, and there was a national story about it. Oh, isn't this cute? These college students are waiting. It's not cute. This is voter suppression. This is election theft. And so if what happens in Georgia, if you see it happen on November 3rd, you prepare for a Trump dictatorship. So we have 5 months, less than 5 months, to prevent this from happening. And that's it. So, all right, class, we're going to move into the nuclear issue. Susan Shapiro. We have Paul Gunter. We have Joe DeMar, Tim Judson, Cindy Volkers, and Kevin Camps, hopefully. And now we got Susan Shapiro. Susan, you're in upstate New York. You are directly downwind from the Indian nuclear power plant, Indian Point nuclear power plant. We have Unit 1 was shut a long time ago. Unit 3 is going to operate apparently another year. Thank God it's the only one left, but pray God it doesn't blow up. You have the shutdown of Unit 1 to celebrate, Unit 2 to celebrate. You want to tell us about how we got Indian Point Unit 2 shut down, and then we'll move on?
Well, it was a lot of people, and it was a big effort to get Indian Point 2 and 3 to be shut down. The main reason I believe it got shut down is that we no longer need the energy from Indian Point. New York Independent Service Operator has confirmed that we don't need replacement power because it's already been replaced. There's plenty of energy in New York to power New York City and the whole area. And also, it was a real effort by many of the people that are on the line and local community groups, IPSEC and Riverkeeper and Clearwater, that all really worked for many years, you know, since 9/11 and even before that, to get this plant shut down. Indian Point has been riddled with technical problems, physical problems for years, and it was really basically rusting and wasting away right here in New York in the midst of 20 million people. It was extremely dangerous. It still is extremely dangerous. It's half as dangerous as it was a few months ago. But we still have tons and tons and tons of nuclear waste that's going to be sitting here on the banks of the Hudson River pretty much forever. That has to be dealt with. And we're asking for a Citizens Oversight Board to make sure that the decommissioning and the shutdown is done properly and not done in a haphazard, underfunded way that actually continues to endanger all of us here.
Well, let's just say hearty mazel tov and thanks for getting it shut down. My daughter and her five children and husband live in Muncie, directly downwind. I've got kids and grandkids in Teaneck, Manhattan. So I am thrilled, and I just can't wait for Unit 3 to go down. So finally, Indian Point, terrible, terrible problems there. Tim Judson from NEARS, you've been working on Indian Point for years. Do you want to do a little celebrate? So you're on camera. You could do a dance if you want.
Yeah, no, it's been a really historic victory. I mean, you know, people have been working to shut Indian Point, you know, pretty much, you know, since the first reactor was built there in the 60s. It's been generations of struggle to close those reactors down. And, you know, I've personally been involved for a little over 20 years, you know, and it's been, you know, just dogged persistence and you know, and the commitment of local activists and, you know, and supporting national organizations all that time. And frankly, you know, I think also kudos to the New York State Attorney General's office, you know, through multiple generations of people in that office as well, from, you know, from Elliot Spitzer to, you know, to the current Attorney General, Tish James. They've, you know, mounted a really historically, you know, robust legal challenge to the relicensing of Indian Point alongside Riverkeeper. And got inspections that would have never been done of those reactors that showed that the internal components of the plant were falling apart on the inside of the reactor vessel. You know, that would have never happened if not for Riverkeeper and for the State Attorney General's office.
It is amazing. I think all of us in the course of our careers have worked on Indian Point, so we should all take a little victory lap here. Paul Gunter, you've been a major factor in getting Indian Point shut. I see you're in the control room there. tell us your feelings about the shutdown of Indian. I mean, this is a big deal, folks, and it proves that we can win. I mean, the owners of Indian Point did not want to shut it down. If they had their way, they'd be running it for the next until it blows up, and then they'll, you know, do whatever. So, Paul,
I think it's you're right. It's a major point of for victory. We've got one more to go there on that site to shut down. The problem, of course, that will go on ad infinitum is all the nuclear waste that's sitting there on the Hudson River. And that is going to present a problem for quite some time, likely a geological span of time. So it basically underscores the imperative that we shut these reactors down very quickly, as quickly as we can, just to cap the amount of nuclear waste that's being generated that we don't really know how to manage into the distant future when nobody's going to get a lot of benefit, but all the liability of the nuclear waste.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's fantastic. It's fantastic that they're shut, but boy, what a nightmare to continue with. And you, Paul, had a great deal to do with it. Kevin Camps, you've been working on this for a long, long time.
Yeah, kind of like Paul said. I mean, certainly something to celebrate big time. As soon as the fuel comes out of the core of Unit 2 at Indian Point, you can't have a meltdown in the core by definition. And also no more high-level radioactive waste is going to be generated there. But guess what? That fuel, now irradiated, goes into the storage pool for many long years where there's already a mountain of high-level radioactive waste stored. So we got to worry about the fuel in the pool. We even have to worry about it once it's taken out and put into the dry casks. Of course, we have to worry about the cleanup of that site because they had the pool leaking high-level radioactive waste into the soil, into the groundwater, into the Hudson River. That went on not for years, but more like decades. And just to add to the challenge, even after shutdown, you've got Holtec International, this crooked company, trying to come in on Indian Point, take it over, get access to the $2 billion plus dollars in the decommissioning trust fund, do as little cleanup as they can get away with, take shortcuts on high-level radioactive waste management, and then stick the money in their pocket. And a part of that so-called high-level radioactive waste management is Holtec's scheme to simply move the waste out to New Mexico and probably some decade or century walk away from it, leaving it at the surface of the earth forever. And one of those transport schemes is to barge it down the Hudson River past Manhattan into a New Jersey port. So talk about a safety and security risk that would be. So we have to, you know, remain vigilant even after we're taking a break to celebrate a little bit.
All right. Well, throw your hat in the air. All right, very good. Cindy Fulkers, what do you think?
Well, actually, there's a couple of things. So, yay, it's shut down. because now it's also not giving off its routine releases as it does every time they open up that core to refuel it. So that's good. And then that means that all the sensitive groups like women, children, and those who are pregnant, who are more sensitive to radiation than men, are not getting that dose every 18 to 24 months or so. So that's good. One of the things that I would like to see happen, though, when we shut these things down for the final time and open that core up for the final time, is I would like to see what levels of radiation come out and where they travel from that last time that we open up that reactor core. Because that's what happens every time you refuel, is you open up the core. So I would like some sort of an accounting of what the radionuclide source term is that's coming out of it the final time. Because reporting on these radionuclide releases from these reactors while they're still operating is really kind of a crapshoot. And while they're releasing all this material in the span of hours or days or weeks, they take that dose that comes from those radionuclides and they spread it out over months. So it's not really biologically representative of what's happening for the exposure in the populations at all. And so I think we could get a decent accounting of what actually was in the core for a longer time over the lifespan of the reactor if we would do this, these final measurements as right before, as they open it up for the final time to remove the fuel. But I'm so happy that it's shut down, and I'm holding my breath and hoping to, again, for the one to shut down in 2021, because yay.
Yeah, yay is right. All right, Joe DeMars, I'm going to come to you in a minute because you're in Ohio. And I want to start the second segment with you, but I want to do one more round of the New Yorkers. Susan Shapiro, you are, you know, downwind from Indian Point, but we got four other reactors in New York and that are being propped up with a gargantuan bailout. It's absolutely infuriating. Where do we go now to get these other four reactors shut in New York?
One of the things the NRC really didn't want Indian Point shut down, because I think they believed that this was a linchpin to the end of the nuclear era. This was, you know, shutting down Indian Point meant a lot to them, and they fought tooth and nail to keep it open. And we all do hope the second one is going to, number three will actually shut down next year. But in terms of the money that's being spent to prop up the other nuclear reactors in New York State, it's really pretty obscene, because it's coming out of the clean energy, renewable energy effort that's supposedly happening in New York State. Instead of putting that money towards renewables and efficiency, it's going to prop up nuclear reactors to $7.6 billion. We ratepayers are paying. We are being forced to pay. We don't have an option to opt out to pay, to keep nuclear going in New York State and continuing to make nuclear waste in New York State, which is a continuing burden on all of us in the state. And that was really a Governor Cuomo Public Service Commission act. And we hope they've already received quite a lot of that money. And we would really hope that at this point, Governor Cuomo would say to the PSC, it's time to reconsider this and let's stop funding Exelon, basically, to keep these upstate reactors open, and let's put the money towards renewables. As we see with COVID-19, we need to be self-sufficient. We can't rely on these large power sources anymore.
Absolutely. Okay, very well said. Paul Gunter, what do you think about the upstate four reactors there?
You know, three of the four of those upstate reactors are also Fukushima-style reactors. These are the General Electric boiling water reactors. And so that is a pretty good reason that these should be shut down promptly, because that design doesn't work. The containment is undersized. We've known that since 1972. It's been affirmed in 1986. And then we saw in March of 2011, three of these things blow up and melt down. I mean, what more proof do you need? But we've still got 20 of these GE Mark I's operating in the United States now. So that should be a top priority, to get those three Fukushima-style reactors shut down overnight would be a good time.
Very good. Absolutely. Tim Judson, you're working a lot on these in New York. What about the other New York reactors?
Yeah, well, I mean, I actually think that that in many ways it's actually connected to Indian Point. And you know, I think while we're right to celebrate the closure of Indian Point 2 and the pending closure of Indian Point 3, there's a different battle going on now. And it's been ramping up over the last year or so. But the industry, you know, really feels threatened by the closure of the reactors that are happening around the country. And they're what they're doing is actually sort of mounting a pretty, you know, sort of sophisticated PR campaign to try to spin the closure of reactors like Indian Point as though it's some sort of environmental tragedy as opposed to the historic victory that it is. And so they've got front groups and commentators and PR people running op-eds all the time right now in New York every week, sometimes in multiple venues, talking about the closure of Indian Point as a climate disaster. They're using all sorts of hyperbolic language, you know, trying to connect Indian Point, you know, the closure of Indian Point, to the COVID crisis in New York City. And so, you know, we're actually really pushing back. We've got a campaign that we're working on with anti-fracking and anti-nuclear groups in New York called Beyond Indian Point, trying to actually spin this, you know, I mean, trying to actually tell the story, you know, the right way, which is that, you know, renewable energy and energy efficiency are already replacing Indian Point. And, you know, and then there's actually going, New York State is going to, you know, continue reducing it, greenhouse gas emissions, you know, towards all of its ambitious targets, you know, while closing Indian Point. And we think that the real reason they're doing this, because there's no real chance that the closure of Indian Point is going to be prevented at this point. It's really to shore up the subsidies for the other plant, for the other reactors in the state. You know, the existing bailout extends until March of 2029. And Exelon, you know, is intent on getting as much subsidies as it can for as long as it can to continue operating those nukes into the future. And so we really think that we need to consolidate our victory with Indian Point closing by actually getting people to understand the truth, which is that nuclear power is being replaced with renewables and efficiency, just like coal and natural gas are. And we actually need to be, sort of reiterating that over and over again, to be able to beat back this industry narrative that's trying to spread misinformation and lies about it.
You know, just, you want to throw stuff. Kevin Camps and then Cindy.
Yeah, just a couple last thoughts. I just wanted to mention about Indian Point Unit 3 that it's on a short list that you don't want to be on, and that is the 5 worst embrittled reactor pressure vessels at pressurized water reactors in the United States. So, you know, that's one more thing to worry about for the next year of operations there. If you have a pressurized thermal shock, you can fracture the reactor pressure vessel through wall. Then there's no contingency to prevent a meltdown. You have to hope that the containment holds the radioactivity, which is questionable, as we saw at Fukushima Daiichi, for example. And just one more thought about the upstate reactors. I mean, Governor Cuomo's famous line was about Indian Point, what are New Yorkers supposed to do, swim to Jersey? So the question has to be asked at these half-century-old reactors in upstate New York, what are New Yorkers supposed to do, swim to Ontario? So the breakdown risks at the upstate reactors are extreme at this point. And if a major safety system were to have an unforeseen breakdown, it can lead to the worst. So really, those reactors, for age-related degradation reasons alone, should be shut down as soon as possible.
Well, let me just say, if I had the awful choice of swimming across the Hudson to New Jersey or swimming across Lake Ontario to Toronto, I think I'd take the shorter swim. Cindy?
Sure. So I also want to remind folks that the only good reactor is no reactor at all. We know that European studies have shown that there are increases of childhood leukemias around operating nuclear power reactors. We know that they canceled a study in this country that would have investigated just such increases in childhood diseases around reactors. And so for me, closing these reactors down is a health boon. Keeping them open is a health risk, even if they don't have any catastrophes. But clearly the upstate New York reactors, Fukushima-style design, are threats. So we need to close them down, of course, but not just because they might explode, which is terrifying and horrible and catastrophic, but also because we know that nuclear power reactors seem to be associated with childhood leukemias under normal operating conditions.
You know, it's beyond me. Okay, now we're going to step off the cliff here and go to Ohio. And we got Joe DeMars in Bowling Green. And I could not articulate without smashing the computer what just happened in the Ohio legislature. But Joe DeMars is in Bowling Green. I think I lived most of my life in central Ohio, but I'm now thankfully in California. But Joe, you're still there. Tell us what the Ohio legislature, which is completely gerrymandered, two super majorities in both houses of the Ohio legislature for the Republicans, even though the state is 50-50 or maybe 51-52 Democratic. So tell us what they just did.
Well, you're not far off when you were talking about the Republicans going insane. They just passed something called House Bill 104. Now, it has not yet passed the Senate, but listen to the title of this bill. This is the Enact Advanced Nuclear Technology Helping Energize Mankind Act, which is...
They're not even saying humankind, right? Did they miss the Me Too movement, or what's the deal?
Yeah, they did. They missed that. It skipped right over the Ohio legislature. Yeah, so, I mean, that has to be one of the craziest titles of a bill I've ever seen. But essentially, what this bill does is it creates something called the Ohio Nuclear Development Authority, which is a panel made up of nine quote-unquote stakeholders that's directly from the bill. And these stakeholders are people who are currently in the nuclear industry, and they have to represent people who are involved in safety, industry, in the nuclear industry, representing industry, and engineering. And what these nine people are supposed to be doing is creating a whole program in Ohio that is supposed to simultaneously reduce nuclear waste while making Ohio the leader in the world of developing new advanced, quote unquote, they use the word advanced something like 50 times, advanced nuclear technology. So to put that point of craziness home, one of the stated purposes of this law is, quote, to reduce waste and produce isotopes, which, you know, if you understand physics, you understand that radioactive isotopes are nuclear waste. So you're right. Going to reduce waste by producing more of it somehow.
I lived in Columbus, and I had to stop going into the legislature. It was like the night of the living dead. I mean, you know, pod people in there. Go ahead. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Well, but this idea that these people can be part of the Ohio government and still remain employed in the nuclear industry, I can only call that fascism. And I have to call this, the real purpose, as far as I could deduce from my reading of it, is to make Ohio a nuclear waste dump, is to start bringing all this stuff into Ohio so that we can reduce it while making isotopes. But this, you know, you were talking about New York's bailouts for for their nuclear plants. And yeah, those nuclear plants are terrible, like Ginna and Nine Mile Point. But Ohio, of course, was the place where last year we passed House Bill 6, which was Ohio's nuclear bailout. And there was actually a recent development on that. House Bill 6 added $1 billion to Ohioans' electric bills to bail out two nuclear plants and two coal plants. But one of the criticisms of it at the time was that there was no restrictions on the money. There was no, you know, they weren't directed to do anything. It was just, here's $1 billion. And so what just happened last month is that the company that came out of bankruptcy, Energy Harbor, that now owns the nuclear plants, just did $800 million in stock buybacks to the two out-of-state vulture capital companies that own 60% of their stock. In other words, they took Ohioans $1 billion in charges that they added to the bill for the bailout, and they just literally just pocketed $800 million of it, just took the cash and ran. So I think that's what's at the back of all of this, is this kind of corruption. In the House Bill 104, the specific job requirements to get on the stakeholder panel, which of course no environmentalists, no one from the general public, those requirements are so specific, it's like they already have the 9 people in mind and they input into the law like a job resume that they have to match in order to get hired. So
The depth of corruption is staggering. And I want to tell you that when Ohio passed HB 6, and Joe was personally involved in this, and we took testimony from Joe on this. When HB 6 was passed, the nuclear bailout, which wasn't a nuclear bailout at all, they just used the nuclear plants as excuses to stiff the ratepayers of Ohio for $1 billion. It was it was a scam, you know, a Ponzi scheme. And so the reaction, partly from the oil and gas industry, but from the general public in Ohio, was absolute horror. And I have to say, having grown up in Ohio, that I've never seen the newspapers in Ohio more united in a progressive mode than around this. I mean, virtually every newspaper in the state editorialized against this bailout, which didn't even rise to the level of a bailout. It was just it was like walking in and opening the cash register of the public and taking out the money for no reason. But they used the nuclear plants as the excuse. So they stiffed us for $1 billion. So the oil, gas, and the environmental movement united on this one and drafted a petition to overturn HB 6, which under the law, Ohio has referendum, you can do it. And when people went out, this is really terrifying stuff. When people like Joe went out to gather signatures, to get the petition, to get the issue, the repeal of the bailout on the ballot, they were physically assaulted by hired thugs. They got no police protection, and the petition did not get enough signatures to go on the ballot. I mean, this is fascism. And then they walked away with the money, and now, you know, and they just pocketed it. It's got nothing to do with nuclear power. They use nuclear power as an excuse to steal this money from the public. I mean, you know, this is really as low as – this is the age of Trump here, people, and this is fascism. So, and nuclear power is a big part of it. I want to say also real quick, and Joe's up in Northern Ohio. I don't know how many of you saw this movie, Planet of the Humans, but they go after wind power, and they talk about how terrible wind power is, even though there's no evidence whatsoever. Their basic line is wind and solar aren't going to save us. But Ohio has and we've been working with this for almost 10 years. Northern Ohio is flat. It's windy. There's all the transmission lines you'd ever need. The farmers are desperate for wind power because it would be a huge money maker. And starting in 2016, the Ohio legislature stuck one sentence into the Ohio code that has prevented wind power from going ahead in Northern Ohio. And wind power could, every ounce, every electron of electricity in Ohio could be provided with reliable, safe, cheap, profitable windmills along the North Coast and in the lake. And the legislature has successfully prevented over $4 billion worth of development of wind power in Northern Ohio that would have stopped all this stuff. There would have been no nuclear. The reactors would have shut. There would have been no bailout. And now none of this insanity from the legislature. But Joe, do you want to add to that before we make the round again?
Yeah, I just want to say that when Davis Bessie, one of the two nuke plants, that got quote-unquote bailed out, was up for relicensing 10 years ago, we, with experts, laid out for First Energy, the company that then owned the nuke plants, we laid that out for them. Even then, crunching the numbers, even with the level of technology of solar and wind at that point, we said you will make more profit if you close your Duke plants and switch to wind and solar, and the resource is more than adequate to do that. And, you know, they ignored us. So yeah.
Yeah, they ignored you. And then when you personally, Joe, went out to gather signatures, tell us what your experience was.
Well, my experience wasn't as bad as some of the petitioners. I just had a guy shouting, 5 feet away from me, shouting at anybody who tried to approach me at the top of his lungs, you know, don't go near him. He's trying to give Ohio's grid to the Chinese, which was the incredible lie that they told. But I don't know if you've ever gathered petition signatures, but it's impossible to get people to stop and talk to you if someone 5 feet away from you is screaming at them at the top of their lungs. But some of my other petitioners, they had, like, there was one woman, Becca Calhoun. She's just barely 5 foot tall. She got surrounded by four goons, basically, who literally surrounded her and her car as she had tried to walk to a parking lot. And once she got in her car, they followed her in their car. And we had people shoved. We had minor injuries. We had phones broken. It was ugly. It was probably the ugliest thing I've ever seen in conjunction with trying to get a petition ballot on the petition on the ballot. And I want to also emphasize that opposition to HB6 was literally across the entire political spectrum. The Greens opposed it. The Libertarians opposed it. The Ohio Manufacturers Association opposed it. The Sierra Club proposed it. Literally the only ones that spoke in favor of it, and it was only about 10% of the people at the hearings, were people who were going to directly, personally benefit from it economically. So it was a bad day for the environment and for democracy.
Kevin Camps, you've been involved. Nobody knows more about David Spessy than you do. What's your reaction to all this? I mean, I can barely speak, frankly.
Yeah, Joe touched on it. We had an expert witness, the emeritus head of the physics department of the University of Toledo, Al Campan, who's a solar PV inventor, as our expert witness, showing that solar and wind could easily replace Davis Bessie's electricity if the plant were to retire as planned on Earth Day 2017. And the licensing board at the Atomic Safety and Licensing Board wanted to hear more. They wanted to grant us a hearing. And then the company, First Energy, with its big law firm, appealed to the NRC commissioners, who said, no, there's not going to be such a hearing on that. So we didn't get our day in court. We got, you know, kicked out of kangaroo court, a 20-year license extension rubber stamped by the NRC. I did want to follow up and point out that the Trump 2020 campaign head in Ohio played a significant role in the passage of HB6. He directly lobbied state legislators. And in the state house, I believe it was, the thing passed by a single vote. So it was essential that he did that. And his argument was the nukes and the coal burners shut down in Ohio and Trump loses in 2020. So that was brushing up against the legal limits on, you know, he didn't report that as campaign activity. So FEC violations, anyone? I mean, supposedly the Ohio Secretary of State was going to look into the thuggery in the streets and other stuff. I haven't heard anything about that being resolved. So the last thing I was going to mention, just to show Trump involvement in all this, was that Energy Secretary Rick Perry, former Energy Secretary Rick Perry, his previous presidential campaign manager, became a lobbyist for First Energy. And he was very busy seeking bailouts at both the state and federal levels on this stuff. So Trump's fingerprints are on this thing in Ohio.
Yeah. And, you know, we've gone with this. It's not even a bailout. It's just outright theft with David Spessy and Perry as the shiny object here. Paul Gunter, you're from the Detroit area, and you followed the story. What do you think?
Well, it's a great day for investors. You can loot the ratepayers and make a fortune all around this travesty called nuclear power. You know what I want to mention right now is that we are in the age of the pandemic, and putting that in context of nuclear power, you know, we've got populations now sheltering in place from a viral threat. Every emergency planning zone around the 95 operating reactors right now are essentially frozen in place, and they're all unprepared for an event, an accident that could occur at any one of these nuclear power stations. And at the same time, the emergency preparedness system for this country's nuclear power station have fallen apart. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the nuclear industry, in an effort to continue to bail out an uneconomical industry, are shaving safety requirements off of their operating license, so that right now nuclear power stations around the country are able to roll back fitness for duty requirements, for example, for control room operators, fire brigades, security forces, and make them work 84 hours a week for 2 weeks straight in a relaxation of fitness for duty requirements. They're shaving off inspections that are required under the operating license and deferring them for 18 months. All of this in the bid to, pinch pennies, rob ratepayers, and continue to generate more nuclear waste that we don't know what to do with.
God, you know, how did we get in this situation? It's awful. Susan Shapiro, you want to jump in on this?
This whole situation that we're in is this, the nuclear regulatory industry is the nuclear industrial complex that, we were warned about many, many years ago. And we've just been deeper and deeper and deeper into it, because most people really can't get their heads around it. This group that you're talking to are brilliant, very committed people who've been working on this for years. And there's local community groups around the country that are working on it. But we are such a minority. That's one of the problems. And most people just, it's too overwhelming for them. It's too frightening. And so they just shut down and they go, oh, well, somebody else is taking care of it. And that's how they've been getting away with it. I believe that it's not only a lack of education, it's the fear component. And Paul's right. We are sheltering in place right now. Everyone's been sheltering in place with no safety mechanisms in place. And a total reduction of safety at the nuclear plants. In fact, COVID-19 has been running rampant within the nuclear plants. And they continue to do refueling without any consideration for the workers and how the workers impact the communities that they then step into, these imported workers. And every day that every nuclear plant continues to operate, we're making more waste that we have no place to put. There's no place on the planet for this nuclear waste. There's no solution. It just has to stop.
Absolutely. Right on with that. Tim Judson, Mears.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I think I would actually challenge something that was said a little while ago, which is that, I think this was a bailout of the nuclear plants in Ohio. But I think that, the industry has been really effective over the last several years of spinning these bailouts as though they're somehow bailouts for the climate, right? They're somehow bailouts for the public interest in some way. And really all bailouts ever are is a corporate finance scheme. And, First Energy needed a bailout in order to satisfy its lenders and its investors, because it was, because it was running coal and nuclear power plants that weren't profitable, instead of investing in a business strategy of converting to renewables and energy efficiency. And so, when First Energy says, lobbies the Ohio legislature and says it needs a $1 billion bailout for its, for its nuclear plants, and it's also going through a bankruptcy process where it's spinning off those power plants into a company that has no other assets, and it's going through bankruptcy hearings with its lenders and investors, you have to be wondering, where's this company who can't operate this plant profitably now going to get the revenue to pay us back the loans that we we've made to them to keep them running, while their decommissioning funds for these reactors are underfunded. The bailout actually was necessary for First Energy. It just wasn't necessary for the people of Ohio. It wasn't necessary for the climate. It wasn't necessary for anything except to please the banks and the stockholders. And that's all these bailouts are. And I think one of the things that we need to really you know, I mean, as the American people get religion about, is that renewable energy and energy efficiency and battery storage and all the things we need to solve the climate crisis and phase out nuclear power are here. The problem is that we have a corporate industrial class that is controlling our politics and, you know, and driving all of our money into a dead end to support these polluting, dangerous, you know, energy industries. And we got to get on the other side of that. And I think hopefully the COVID crisis is going to be a bridge to that for us, because I think as we've seen in the last couple of months, you know, when this nation really understands that it's facing an existential crisis, we can mobilize trillions of dollars in no time at all to do the right thing. And that's exactly what we got to do here.
Man, exactly right. Cindy?
Dovetailing on what Tim said, you know, encapsulating it in a sentence or two, nuclear power isn't compatible with democracy. It's not compatible with free markets. Certainly, if they're getting bailouts, that's kind of like corporate socialism, is it not? And I would add to that there is systemic racism in nuclear technologies, has been from the beginning, from the atomic bombings on Marshall Islands and in Nevada, to the uranium mining in Navajo, to the waste dumps now that Kevin is having to help folks, you know, shepherd them through this whole horrible process, to forced civilian nuclear reactors in African American communities in Georgia. I mean, this whole tech has been built on the lie that it is good for people. It is not good for people. It's good for the profits of a few. Everybody else can get sick and die as far as they're concerned. And this is what we're fighting against. So to Susan's point, I think it's really important to understand, yes, there are a few of us, but boy, we are determined. And it would be really good if we could get more people into the folds as we build these bridges, say, for the systemic racism problem, et cetera, et cetera. Because people need to understand what's going on. And I wanted to point out really quickly some commemorations that are coming up. There's the 75th. Year after the bombings of Japan, that's this year, 2020. There's a 35th year and the 10th year commemorations of Chernobyl and Fukushima, respectively, and that's going to be in 2021.
Well, God,
and also the 75th anniversary of the Trinity test in New Mexico, and the 41st anniversary of the Church Rock spill in New Mexico as well.
Well, this was a great crew. Thank you, guys. It's great to be able to see you with Zoom, and thank you for being on. I will say that this week's Georgia fiasco, following on Wisconsin and Ohio, folks, we've got less than 5 months to preserve any kind of semblance of democracy in this country. Just got an election protection. You guys have contacts in Ohio and in Michigan, which are key swing states. And just got to go there, got to make vote by mail work, got to get the registration rolls figured out, get people re-registered, protect the ballot, and we cannot have the November election look like Georgia, Ohio, and Wisconsin, or we will never again. I will say, you know, the media in Ohio covered the bailout, but it did not cover the thuggery that Joe DeMars talked about in preventing the referendum. We would have won that referendum, no doubt about it. And so, you know, the one thing that Donald Trump hates more than anything is democracy. And as safe energy activists, we really need to focus now on what's coming up in November. If we don't get through this election, it's deep nuclear waste. Joe DeMar, thanks for being on with us. From Ohio, Paul Gunter, Kevin Camps, Tim Judson, Cindy Folker, Susan Shapiro. Thank you, Jesse, for engineering this. Thank you, Zoom. We will be back next week. Please join me again on the weekly meeting on the emergency COVID protection. Email me at solartopia@gmail.com. A week from today, we will have PRN will cover it. We will have a national Facebook-based seminar on election protection, and we'll see you next week here at PRN and the Green Power Wellness Show. Thanks so much.
Will we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we multiplied, we needed more. The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
But the nuclear plants were built in haste, with too many risks and no place for waste. And so from Seabrook to Shoreham Town, we have to shut those new plants down. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
Now we're fighting wars over oil and gas. No matter who wins, it will not last. The earth is scarred, the planet is warming. Don't you think that all of it's a great big warning?
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
We'll learn to power houses and cars from the light that's made up in the stars. It's a gift to share that's always been given. It falls down to earth like rain from heaven.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
One more.
Solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're